I am Paige Alviniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. In today's episode, Gabriella Mirabelli, vice president, consumer insights at Balance Media, dives into millennial viewing habits and discovers some surprising things. Among them, linear TV isn't doing as well as you think it is, and you probably don't think it's doing that well, and people aren't really downloading apps anymore. Check out her talk at Promax Europe and Amsterdam to glean Gabriella's insights for yourself.
Everybody, great to be here today. About 2 years ago, I surveyed 3,000 young millennials to find out how they discovered content, where they consumed the content they discovered, and also if they knew the brands that had created the content they were watching. What we discovered was that 58% of our young millennials were discovering their content through social networks. And this isn't surprising, and it's only going up. And then we also found that 50% were watching that content on television, and the other 50% were watching on mobile or laptop. And the mobile-laptop blend is shifting so that there are more laptop viewers. But the branding piece is really what we were interested in most, and this is what we found. Surprisingly, the broadcasters in the United States were remarkably similar. Amazon, 20%. Hulu at 15, but then there was Netflix, and that 65%, and we were like, what is going on with Netflix? What is it about their brand? What are they doing? What are they doing around brand recognition? And so we looked at the six touch points of brand recognition. And the first one, on-air promotion, and here's where our broadcasters had a huge advantage over our streamers, because they owned their air. So we want to dive a little bit into that, given how all of us originally started working with that. In 2015, Nielsen did a survey of where people were consuming their media. And they found that 61% of them were consuming it watching live TV. They looked again in 2017, and what had happened was it had changed to 47%. What does that mean? You know, we all think of our bosses being all nervous about that. Well, I have a friend who works for the largest smart TV company, and he shared on the down low some of their data with me. And he said, linear consumption on smart TVs, look at this giant red pie, 78%. And in the US, that 78% is watching nearly 5 hours of live TV. So everybody goes, whew. We're okay. Live TV is doing great. Except if you look at that little yellow slice, 2%, and that 2% is watching 8 minutes of live TV. So 8 minutes, what is that? That's checking the weather, it's checking the score, that's sitting on the remote. I mean, who are these people? They bought smart TVs, 8 minutes? Well, so we decided to look at who they were. And what we found was that 41% of those people who went out and bought a smart TV were watching only 8 minutes of linear TV. So what's important about this is you can't use television sales as a proxy for the kind of viewing that's going on. The television is simply another glass which people are watching television on. In fact, recent studies have shown that that TV glass is becoming more and more popular for watching streaming and other content. In other words, content consumption is changing. All of this content consumption is going up, with the exception of live TV, which is going down. Which means that we really should also be careful about our definitions, because the word TV gets really muddy. Luckily for us, the future of the internet is video. So we can breathe a sigh of relief, because we're going to be okay. So let's get back to our screen touch points. Next on our list was digital ads. You're about as likely to climb Mount Everest as you are to click on one of those banner ads. And we did not find that brand recognition was particularly associated with the digital ads. The websites were not especially strong, and they were not related. Mobile apps. Did you know that the average person downloads precisely 0 apps per month? You might have downloaded the ProMax app? That's because it had utility for you. But think about the apps you use on your phone. You probably use about 20% of your apps for 80%, and they're probably owned by two companies. Search. Now, search is interesting. What we found here was that 41% of search results actually resulted in piracy. So the top listings were for piracy sites, which is not at all what we want when we're trying to brand our programming with our network. And what's more is we have actually found that piracy is on the rise. And this is because, we believe, as over-the-top providers and networks are increasingly creating original scripted content and not sharing it with anybody else, people are saying, I want what I want, where I want, how I want. Price is not the only driver for piracy. In fact, I would say it's not the most important driver. It's really access and ease of getting what you want. So then we got social media. And this is interesting. This is where people were discovering their content. About a year ago, Facebook did a study of people watching a show, and they also had second screen available with Facebook. And you'll see the red are the commercial breaks, and the spikes are using Facebook. So they're on the show, and then they're dumping out, and they're paying attention to Facebook. What this might mean for us is that maybe when we're promoting, we want to push those promos also to that social platform. So we did actually find a significant relationship between social engagement and brand recognition. And actually what we found was an R-squared of 0.7. And if you're not a statistician, what that means is that 70% of the relationship between the different brand recognitions and the engagement on social, in this case it was actually Facebook social, was directly attributable to that social engagement, which made us have a hypothesis, which was that there was this relationship between social media promotion and linear television. So we decided to look at it. You might have remembered Nielsen did a study, and they tied Twitter with ratings. And the thing with that is you can't make people tweet. Certainly, it seems very logical that if people like a show, they're going to tweet about it. So maybe it's an indicator, but you don't have an oar in that water. But what about social engagement on other platforms? So we decided to check to see whether there was a relationship between social video engagement across YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and linear ratings. And it's interesting is we found that a 10% increase in social engagement was tied to a 1.04 increase in linear ratings. So the world is changing, and a lot of people will say, well, you know, broadcast was disrupted by cable, and we're just being disrupted by social. We'll survive. And yeah, we'll survive, but the disruption is actually very different. It's different in three significant ways. The first way in which it's different is the nature of the media. Cable and broadcast were both mass media pushing onto the public. Social media is a pull, push, we interact with it, we spread it out, it works on a social network. So that's a significant difference. Another way in which they're different is the pipe of discovery. In broadcast and in cable, our channels own that pipe of discovery. They push the promos, you're in that pipe, you learn about the show. With social media, we don't own that pipe. Think about it. The way they find out about our shows, we don't control. I was at a breakfast with Mike Hopkins at the time. He was the CEO of Hulu, and I said, what's your social strategy? And he said, well, we're frenemies. They need our content. We need them for discovery. And I said, really? I mean, you know, not for nothing, but Google and Facebook have a duopoly on the ad market. VCs aren't funding ad plays anymore. How important to Facebook is Hulu? And he paused, and then he said, not very. And see, that is a significant change. We're used to a situation where the networks are the gorillas in the room. And if the networks are the gorillas in the room, then these social platforms are Tyrannosaurus Rexes tied with Velociraptors. They are just a whole order of magnitude different and powerful. And we don't control that. The third way in which things are different is speed. You know, we talk a lot about change, change, change is constant, but I would say not only is change constant, but it's accelerating. It will never be as slow moving as it is right now. Think about it. Example, how long to reach 50 million? These are numbers from the United States. Radio took 38 years. Shout out what you think TV took. Somebody. 20? Took 13. What about Instagram? 1.5. Look at the speed, the acceleration. So in this situation where it's fractured, it's accelerating, God, how do you cut through the clutter? At another breakfast, I had asked Sherry Redstone, I said, what's your social strategy? I'm testing out this question on people. And she said, well, we make viral videos. This is what was in my head when she said that. Viral videos are an outcome. They're an outcome of a video that's published in a particular time, a social environment, something's happening, as is mediated by an algorithm you don't control. For instance, Google recently changed its algorithm. Valence Media, my company, a Hollywood Reporter, Billboard Magazine, they're part of our portfolio of companies. I was happy by this Google change because as a result, with doing no effort on my part, both Complex and Variety, their engagements went down. They did nothing, and their engagements went down simply because the algorithm changed. So what can you do? How do we manage this? It seems pretty horrible and dire. Well, there are some things you can do. First of all, you can understand social networks. You can understand why people engage with content. And you can understand how to help them notice your content in order to engage it, because we're in a very noisy world. Now, social networks, the network, the way they operate is very different from the way traditional mass media network operates. And before there were social platforms which accelerated these networks, social networks were already in evidence. I'm going to play an ad from the United States from the 80s, which exhibits one of those ways.
Get the one and only Fabergé organic shampoo.
You'll tell two friends, and they'll tell two friends, now you got it, and so on, and so on, and so on.
So what you have is an organic spreading of information. And what that points to is a sort of a nuanced difference. I find out about NBC's content. I'm more likely to find out about it, not because I've gone to NBC's Facebook page, but because one of my friends shared some of their content into my feed. And it's that jump into the organic individual that you want to get. Because, let's face it, Facebook is throttling reach. You can pay if you want to reach people, but if you really want to reach the right people who might engage with it, you need to make that jump. You need to get engagement. And anyway, well, why are people sharing? Why would you tell somebody about shampoo anyway? Well, it turns out that people like to share, and they like to share because it feels good. And the reason it feels good is our brain releases a little bit of dopamine. Well, why does it do that? We're animals, we're creatures, everything our brain does was driven by survival. And people are not lone creatures. People need to be in communities. And the way we're in a community is we have to be recognized by that community. We need to be helpful to that community. So our brains evolve. The ventral medial prefrontal cortex takes in all of the different inputs we get and normalizes them and assigns value. And those things which are useful to community, we then share. We do this to help promote who we are. This is what I ate, this is what I believe, this is what I think. I'm identity managing these things. If you think there's that old Rolling Stones song, man comes on the TV, tells me how white my shirts could be, but he can't be a man because he doesn't smoke the same cigarettes as me. Now in this instance, the identity is the cigarette. And if only he smoked the right cigarette, I would buy the detergent. This is influencer marketing right here. that these people, when you're part of that identity group, your messaging will resonate stronger. This is why influencer marketing is so important to us today. It resonates. It just has greater, it travels further. There was a video that was put out about 2 years ago by MTV Australia. I'm gonna play it for you.
The generation that we call the millennials, they were told that they were special all the time. They were told that they could have anything they want in life, just because they want it. So you take this group, and they graduate school, and they get a job, they find out they're not special, their moms can't get them a promotion, and by the way, you can't just have it because you want it. And in an instant, their entire self-image is shattered. And so you have an entire generation that's growing up with lower self-esteem than previous generations. We're growing up in a Facebook, Instagram world. In other words, we're good at putting filters on things. We're good at showing people that life is amazing, even though I'm depressed. Now, let's add in technology. Engagement with social media and our cell phones releases a chemical called dopamine. That's why when you get a text, it feels good. It's why we count the likes. It's because we know when you get it, you get a hit of dopamine, which feels good. Dopamine is the exact same chemical that makes us feel good when we smoke, when we drink. In other words, it's highly, highly addictive. Too many kids don't know how to form deep, meaningful relationships. They will admit that many of their friendships are superficial, that they don't count on their friends. They have fun with their friends, but they also know that their friends will cancel on them if something better comes along. So when significant stress starts to show up in their lives, they're not turning to a person, they're turning to a device. Now you add in the sense of impatience. Right? They've grown up in a world of instant gratification. You want to go on a date, you don't even have to learn how to be like, hey. You don't have to swipe right. Bang, I'm a stud. Everything you want, you can have instantaneously, except job satisfaction and strength of relationships. There ain't no app for that. And so what this young generation needs to learn is patience, that some things that really, really matter, like love or job fulfillment, joy, all of these things take time.
Now, this was very successful, got, I think, 1 million hits. And why it pushed many of these engagement buttons, it was talking about identity, both for those people who were in that millennial population and those people who weren't. It was sharing information. I'll get a little bit more on that later. And because of these two things, if I posted it, I had a pretty good feeling that I was going to get likes, and that's self-esteem, so it's a trifecta of engagement. Now, when we talk about identity signaling and groups, identity is not merely demographics. It can also be those things we choose. I live in New York, but my dad grew up in Boston. So all of the teams that I follow and root for are Boston teams. So if I wear my Patriots hat, I get a lot of nasty looks. But occasionally, somebody will give me the chin lift of like, yeah, you're a Patriots fan and we're in enemy territory. And that fandom is sort of the holy grail of engagement. Now, sci-fi did something very interesting. They decided to embrace the genre of science fiction and make that their identity. Your brand can become an identity. Think about how powerful that is. Think about Apple. Think about Nike. The other thing, and I touched on it earlier with the millennial video, is information, and this is useful information. This is one of the reasons why infotainment content travels so frequently, or if you're behind the scenes content, special information, because if you can share something which maybe somebody in your community needs that's helpful to the community, it goes over well. many people have seen these hands and pans videos? Yeah. How many have shared hands and pans videos? Seriously? Nobody? Oh my God, this is the first time this has ever happened. You guys all know what to make for dinner. I don't know. Well, in America, people are lazy, and they share these because it gives you an idea of what to make for dessert or dinner, what you torture chicken that particular night with. So let's talk a bit about some GIFs. First of all, who calls them GIFs? Okay, like three people. Who calls them GIFs? Well, us GIF people, we know the guy who invented them calls them GIFs, and we're socially bonding over that fact. GIFs, you know, a lot of times people talk about lately, 6-second ads, what are we gonna do? Ah, nightmare. But the thing is, you can do a lot in a very short period of time, and GIFs are a great example of that. You just have to think of it as a different medium. 6-second ads should be just thought of as a different medium, not a cut down. Think how powerful a GIF is. Individuals process the pictures, communities make them. When you're selecting them, you're showing your cultural knowledge. It's a social shorthand. Now, in addition to these things, the other thing to remember is that people are emotional creatures. If you damage the part of the brain that regulates emotion, you are incapable of making decisions. It's kind of interesting. If you think about it, you think you're logical. You're not really. So when you're making promotion, you want to go towards that emotional feeling because that's going to connect with people.
One thing you will take with you when you leave is your story. It's an eternal story.
Okay, so we understand why people engage, but how do we stop them from scrolling right by? Well, there are several ways to do that, and I'm really running out of time. I'm crazy behind. So I'm going to talk about meta content, and these are going to be tactics. Tactics you can go home and employ right away. Here are thumbnails. We process visuals in 13 milliseconds, so a good thumbnail goes a long way. Epic mealtime thumbnails are really, really ugly. They're also really, really effective. And I'll get to more on why later. Probably the best maker of thumbnails is Netflix. And the reason they are is because in 90 seconds, if they didn't have a compelling thumbnail, people were going to dump out of their product. So they've done a lot of research around thumbnails, not only how to make a thumbnail something you'll click on, but to make sure that thumbnail, once you clicked on it, delivered on the promise. They have teams and teams of data scientists. They A/B test everything. And occasionally, they publish results. So I'm going to share those results so you don't have to have their teams and teams of scientists. First one is emotions, emotional creatures. We also can read faces. Humans are built to read faces. So complex emotions, that's something which we can understand and understand really quickly. Nice guys finish last. People are attracted to polar valences, which means positive emotions and negative emotions. We actually have a tendency for the negative, and there's a survival reason for this. You needed to know, that berry made me really sick. I'm never going to eat it again. The tiger lives over there. I'm going to avoid that section. So there was a survival reason why we tend to remember those things that went wrong. Also, less is more. And this comes to the size of your thumbnail. You really shouldn't probably put more than 3 cast members in that thumbnail at once because it's simply going to be too hard to read quickly. What's also interesting is the use of faces. Georgia Institute of Technology did a study looking at Instagram, and they found that pictures with human faces, 38% more likely to get engagement. That means you're promoting a new show. It's on Instagram. Your designers come to you. They have one image. It's a burning palm tree. They have another image. It's the hottie in the show. Go with the hottie. It's going to work better. High contrast colors. They grab your attention. Think of those epic mealtimes. They had high contrast colors. They had a single face making an expression. Now, admittedly, the execution, not so great maybe, but it was effective. These things aren't new. This is a film poster from the 50s. Look at it. One face, shows emotion, high contrast colors. Upworthy had an interesting case study. The way they describe how they think about it, and it's a good way to remember when going forward, is they have a grocery store theory. They say you go into the grocery store and you pick up the product based on the packaging, not the nutritional labels. If you're a kind of person who goes and shops looking at nutritional labels, you're not in here because you're still in the grocery store. You've never left. Here are two thumbnails. They had two thumbnails, the exact same video. And look, those thumbnails are really bad. So Then they titled them in different ways. The first one was Planet of the Apes is closer to reality than you think. And the other one was two monkeys were paid unequally. See what happens next. First one, 10,000 views. Any guesses for the number of views for this one? 2 million. The only difference was the titling. And this also has to do with context. It's something that was in a social platform. Each platform has a purpose. People go there expecting things. You've got to respect the reasons why people go to the platforms. Another thing is Group 9 did a test with split screening and A-Bing. If you have something, you want to help people understand what they're going to see quickly. Sometimes there are things that spark outrage, but which particular outrage? I apologize.
Your San Francisco quarterback, I'm sure nobody ever heard of, but there was an article today, it was reported, that NFL owners don't want to pick him up because they don't want to get a nasty tweet from Donald Trump. Do you believe that?
11,000 views. Well, then they tried the split screen intro. I'm going to show you the only difference. So this way you knew which particular outrage you were going to click on. That was it. That was the only difference. 36% more engagement. So to wrap up, the tactics for engaging, you can read. The main thing to remember is that people are human, and our biology developed over a long period of time, and we're far more stable than the algorithm at any of the social platforms. Thank you very much.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director at Promax. Andres Trujillo, Promax's social media and community manager, edited this podcast. Video helper provided the music. Digital content producers Kate Lecaire-Marion and Kayla Marie Hardaway contribute to Daily Brief. You can hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Promax_global. You can also email us at dailybrief@promax.org. And please subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.